My next guest is Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of Humble Dollar. You know, Jonathan spent almost two decades at the Wall Street Journal, and he was the personal finance columnist there. Very well respected, very well known, kind of an institution at the Wall Street Journal. And he's got his latest book out called How to Think About Money. Hey, Jonathan, glad you're here. Always love to have you. Welcome.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me back on the show. I really appreciate it.
You know, you sent me the running list of your tweets, and, you know, normally I would think, you know, that would be just okay, but these were particularly funny and covered many of the common investing conundrums, so I thought we'd go through them. What do you say?
Sounds like a plan.
Well, before we go on, tell me how these tweets come out. Are they daily? Are they just when you get an idea? How did they even develop?
So I launched this website, humbledollar.com, just over a year ago. And when I was having the site built, my web developer, James, said to me, hey, you know, why didn't you have a mission statement across the top of the homepage? Well, you know, if you're a journalist, the idea of having a mission statement seems absolutely absurd. But then I thought, well, how about just putting up, you know, one thought every day? So I started putting that thought up, and then I had the site coded so it would go straight to Twitter, and then from Twitter, it goes straight to my professional Facebook page, the Jonathan Clements Money Guide. And so I got into on a roll and started putting these up every day. I've been collecting them, and I have vague plans at some point to turn them into a book. Uh-huh. But for the list that you saw, I pulled together 41 of the ones that I thought were particularly good, and happy to talk about them.
All right, let's go to number one. Here we go. We get just one shot at making the journey from birth to retirement. Flirting with financial disaster is not advisable. When you say flirting with financial disaster, what do you think of when you say that?
There are all kinds of excessive risks we can potentially take. We can bet everything on one or two stocks or on a single sector of the stock market. We can buy stocks using borrowed money, in a margin account. We can not have any disability insurance. We cannot have any life insurance, even though we have a family that depends upon us financially. All of those things invite financial disaster. It may be that you can get through your entire life and not suffer the consequences of this foolish behavior. Maybe you'll never need your disability insurance. Maybe your family won't suffer because you don't have life insurance. But you are running a major risk, and that risk could derail your chances of successfully making it in one piece financially from here to retirement.
You know, I remember back in 2006, the fact that a lot of people were mortgaging their homes to buy other homes. There was a period when the stock market was hot and you'd hear about people pulling the equity out of their homes to buy stock. There are some anecdotal stories now about people doing the same, borrowing money to buy Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. I think this is what you're talking about with flirting with disaster. While things are good, you may feel rich and make a lot of money, but as soon as things start to turn around and go bad, so many things can happen that can destroy your financial life.
And the sort of added point to make here is these are risks you don't need to take. Mm. If you do the sensible things, you save regularly, you diversify broadly across the stock and bond markets, if you make sure you have a reasonable amount of insurance, everything's highly likely to turn out okay. Yeah. So why take these risks? They are unnecessary.
Yeah, so actually you talk about saving. So here's a tweet. Picking superior investments is a crowded trade. Saving more is an easy win. First of all, what does a crowded trade mean?
A crowded trade in Wall Street terms means a lot of people are trying to win at this particular game. And one of the games that a lot of people are trying to win at is beating the stock market averages.
Yeah.
There are, by one estimate, a million professionals around the world trying to figure out which stocks are going to do better than average over the next year.
Yeah.
So when you go out and try to buy investments, that's who you're competing against. And the reality is you don't need to beat the market in order to accumulate a decent amount of wealth. I mean, you look at those long-run performance charts of the broad market indexes of the S&P 500 or of the international markets, if you simply captured the returns of those broad indexes, you would be extremely happy over a 20 or 30 year period. So why take the added risk of trying to beat the market?
You know, let me stop you there. The other part of this tweet, though, I want to concentrate on this idea that saving more is the easy win. Now, when people come to see me and they want to start investing, I think the first thing that they need to know is that most of your wealth is going to be created through your savings, especially when you're starting out. If you earn a 10 or a 20% return, I'm going to be ridiculous, but say on $100, you know, so that gets you to 120 bucks. That's not making you wealthy, but it's that $100 a month that you're putting away or more or saving in your 401k that builds up the great wealth. And then later on, the returns really start to make a difference. Any comment on that?
No, you have it absolutely right, Steve. I mean, over the years, I've met thousands of everyday Americans who have managed to amass seven-figure portfolios. Many of these folks had modest salaries. Most of them were mediocre investors, but almost all of them shared one attribute in common. They were extremely frugal, otherwise known as cheap. Mm-hmm. They were great savers, and that's what drove their portfolio's growth.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, here's one. If your kids can borrow it or your friends can admire it, it doesn't count as an investment. Tell me about that.
You think about the things that we buy trying to kid ourselves that they're investments. You know, we buy the fancy car, we buy the second home, we buy the lovely piece of art that hangs above the fireplace. If you buy something and it delivers a lot of psychic income, you really enjoy having it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't count as an investment.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's, let's just say 99.9% of the time, that's probably true. It's that 0.1% of the time that we all dream about that's unlikely to happen. And that makes that, like buying the art, a great investment and so on. Here's another one. Draw up a list of your greatest pleasures in life. Then ask yourself, do you need great wealth to enjoy any of them?
And I actually wrote an entire blog on this topic, talking about the things during my day that I really enjoy. And they are things like that first cup of coffee in the morning, or having a particularly good workout at the gym that leaves you feeling spent, or getting home at the end of the day and sitting down and having a glass of wine with my wife. Those are great moments during the course of my day, and they really don't involve having significant wealth. They are just things that we can all do, even if we earn modest incomes. So while we imagine that our lives would be so much better if we were richer, the reality is what we do every day that we really enjoy, most of it doesn't involve being super rich.
But you know what it does involve, and this is your next tweet. It involves being solvent. It involves making the right decisions so you're not buried in debt. And you wrote, when you're ill, you realize how great it is to feel healthy. Money is similar. When you're broke, you realize how great it is to be solvent. So being solvent is a big part of happiness.
I tell people that in terms of money and happiness, there are really three things that money can do for you. One, it can allow you to have special times with friends and family. Two, it can give you the financial freedom to spend your days doing what you love. And three, simply having money means you don't need to worry about money. Mm-hmm. So being solvent, having some cash in the bank, knowing you'll be okay if you lose your job, that sense that everything's going to be okay financially can deliver an enormous boost to happiness. Whereas if you're in the opposite situation, you don't have any money in your bank, you're not sure how you'd cope if you lost your job, you really don't have any money put away for retirement, that's going to nor you, you're going to spend days worrying about money. And that is a real buzzkill.
Yeah. My guest is Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of Humble Dollar. And he's the guy that was at the Wall Street Journal for almost two decades with a personal finance column. Okay, so here's one that I liked. What's the difference between an equity indexed annuity? So we're talking about investments here specifically. What's the difference between an equity indexed annuity and an index fund? One needs an army of salespeople, the other sells itself.
If you look at the past 10 years, the net flows of money into actively managed mutual funds is actually negative. People have pulled more money out of actively managed mutual funds than they put in. By contrast, index funds, those plain vanilla low-cost funds that simply track the performance of the market averages, those people have been buying like hotcakes. The amount of assets in index funds has exploded. Trillions and trillions of dollars have come into these funds. So index funds by themselves don't need an army of salespeople. People have woken up and realized that they are a great investment. By contrast, equity indexed annuities, there are indeed armies of salespeople out there pushing these things because they pay huge commissions to the salespeople involved. So what's an equity indexed annuity? It ain't an index fund. What it is it's an annuity, which is an insurance product, that will allow you to capture part of the upside of the stock market each year while providing some downside protection. Now, that turns out to be a not particularly good way to make your money grow over time, unless you happen to be the salesperson who sells it, because it's a great way for them to make a huge commission.
I think over time as well, you end up earning the return of a basic bond.
Yeah, because what happens with an equity indexed annuity is, one, you don't get the dividends that you would get if you owned an index fund. And two, the amount that you can make every year is capped.
That's right.
So even if the market is up 20%, you might only make 6. So the net result is, you know, you might make a maximum of 6 in any one year. And in years when the market is flat, you get 0.
And, you know, getting 0 for a year or two can really wreak havoc on anybody's returns.
You got to know, if somebody's pushing something so heavily, if they're making a 12 or 14% commission, if they're willing to pay for you to come and have dinner,
that's
to
right.
listen to
Remember
their pitch.
That, right? That beautiful invitation you get in the mail to the local steakhouse, you know, obviously they're paying a lot for that because they know if they can land one or two of these, they're going to make a big commission. Also, the commission is really, it's not disclosed. We don't really know. It's not transparent. It's not a good business, and people should stay away from these kinds of annuities for sure. Let's move on. A boat is not your financial friend, you say, but a friend with a boat is. I think we all can agree on that.
So I remember an article I read probably 5 years ago now, and the first list in the article was the three things people most wanted to buy, and there among the top three was a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Then later in the article, they had a list of the three things people most regret buying. And there among the three things was
a boat. Of course, right.
You know, we imagine a boat is going to be this sort of wonderful Sunday afternoon, sailing
right.
around the bay,
you got it.
Soaking in the sunshine.
Right.
But instead, what a boat is it's something expensive that you buy, that you have to put away in the winter if you live in the, you know, the northern part of the country. It involves lots of maintenance. You never take it out as often as you like. And a couple of years down the road,
you sell it
for a fraction of what you paid.
Right. Now, I have to admit, I had boat fever at one time, approximately 8 years ago. And man, you couldn't talk me out of it. But I did the smart thing. There was a place locally here in South Florida that allowed you to pay a fixed amount for the year. And then you could just kind of call them and they'll have a boat ready for you. At the end, when you were done boating for that day, you turned the keys over, they cleaned it, and they put it away, and they were responsible for it. And it took about 6 months before I got over that fever, and I realized that this is really, for me, it wasn't very interesting. I don't fish. I don't really do much on the water. I don't water ski, so I did lay around in the bay, sail the bay, so to speak, but it lost its luster really quickly, and I was so thankful that I actually hadn't bought a boat. I just leased it for a year. At the end of the year, that was it. I was over. Move on to the next thing. All right, let's go on. If you keep investing simple and make it understandable, you'll lose half your audience who assume success lies in their own befuddlement. So tell me about that.
Essentially, Steve, this is the story of my mediocre career. I spent 30 years trying to make investing simple and understandable. And what I've belatedly come to realize is this is not what people want. What they really want are articles that sound super sophisticated and clever, so they can boast at the country club about this complicated strategy they're involved in, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Many people do not want to really understand what they're buying and much preferred to buy sophisticated stuff like that equity indexed annuity, like the hedge fund, like that fancy mutual fund that goes long some stocks and short the others. They don't really want to understand what they own.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but these can be found at humbledollar.com. Is that right?
That's correct. It's my January newsletter. If you go to the site and check out the newsletters, you'll find all 41 listed in the January edition.
Jonathan Clements, always a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's been my pleasure, Steve.
To hear this interview again, to listen to the full show, or get a summary of the vital lessons that we've learned here today, go to stevepomerantz.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our weekly update, where we will send you important lessons from the show straight to your inbox.